This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
All right, good morning. House State Affairs will come to order. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Spartling,
here.
Bolin,
here.
Hager,
here.
Howley,
here.
Langer,
here.
Mickelson,
here.
Munsterman,
here.
Solem,
here.
Stevens,
here.
Virtue,
here.
Wink, Westra, Gosh.
Here.
Chairman, we have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Moved
by Westra, seconded by Langer. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Minutes are approved. From our last meeting, we have three items on the agenda today. The first one we will defer until next Monday out of deference for the Attorney General, who is out of town right now. He will be back by then. But I will ask if there was anyone here from out of town who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 24 and cannot be here on Monday. We would take testimony from you at this time. I do not see anyone, so we will move on to Senate Bill 45. This is an act to revise provisions of the Building South Dakota Fund programs. And we'll do proponent testimony on Senate Bill 45.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Pat Costello. I'm Commissioner of the Governor's Office of Economic Development. We have an amendment that is being handed out now, and if it's with your permission, I'd speak to both. You may recall, Building South Dakota came out of the 2013 legislature. It provided what really, in a short amount of years, has become one of our primary economic development tools that we use right alongside future funds and the READY program and others. But it has become very effective in the last couple of years. There are really two major sides of Building South Dakota. One is the reinvestment payment, where the Board of Economic Development considers reinvestment of their sale projects to pay sales and use tax, a reinvestment of that. Today we're going to be talking more about the other half, the side of the five sub-funds that are created under the Building South Dakota, of which three of them are managed by GOED, one by housing and one by education. So I'll just start going into the changes that we're proposing. These changes have really come about from having 3 years of administering the program and ideas that have come from legislators and from our office and the other offices on how to make the programs more effective. So I'll start with housing. They have one change. Their changes essentially allow them to streamline the voucher process on how they submit vouchers to get money out of the fund. Currently, the way it's set up, they have to, for a single project, they have to submit multiple vouchers to withdraw the money. This simplifies things into one project, one voucher system. It also allows them to revolve the interest and the principal back into the program, and it also allows them to take some administrative expense for the cost for their person to administer the program. So Mark Lausing from South Dakota Housing is in the room today. If you have any questions on that, I'm sure Mark would be happy to address that. With that, I'll go on to our changes that we are proposing from the three programs that we administer at GOED. The first is to allows us the opportunity as a commissioner to move the funds amongst our three programs. We have an infrastructure fund, a partnership, and a jobs fund. And as money comes into the Building South Dakota, infrastructure receives 25% of the fund, partnership program receives 15%, and the jobs receives 5%. Well, over the course of time, there are different demands, and the programs are very individual. We're seeing different demand levels based from our partners on how which programs they are utilizing. And right now, we're seeing more of a demand under the partnership program than we are necessarily on the infrastructure. For example, at the end of last fiscal year, we essentially were about $768,000 negative in the partnership program, whereas we had $2 million in the infrastructure program. Now, when I say we are negative, keep in mind the board met in June. We had the budget was already passed. We knew the money was going to be eligible on July 1st, and so the board essentially went ahead and approved a bunch of applications in order that we get the money out right away. So Everything was fine with that. But it just shows you there's more of an increased demand in the partnership program. The partnership program really is designed for two things, and that leads me to the next change, is we want to expand the partnership program. The way it is, exists today, the partnership program allows us to help our local partners hire a part-time economic development person or maybe take a part-time person to full-time, and it's on a one-to-one match. And the other use is to recapitalize revolving loan funds. We would like to add a third component to that, and that is for community building, to allow communities to come to us. We'll match the dollars to help them hire a third party, a consultant, to identify challenges for their communities in economic development, leadership, to pull the community together to work for economic development efforts. And so that would be a third component of the partnership program. The other two changes we have are to, we had proposed in the original bill to have the legislature set a priority under the partnerships for revolving loan funds to a higher priority for recapitalizing regional revolving loan funds versus individual community loan funds. We think that makes sense knowing what we know about managing loan programs and the internal controls that are needed with that, that more regional approach makes more sense. And we're also finding with the regional loan programs, we're getting more leverage. Oftentimes, the regional programs will leverage USDA money, and they can get a 4-to-1 match where the program as it exists now is a 1-to-1 match. So we think we can make our state programs go further with a more of a leverage, and we think it makes more sense to address this on a regional level than on an individual community level, which may not necessarily have the internal controls necessary to administer a fund. Now, the Senate, on the Senate side, they amended the language in it that it said the board shall provide a priority to regional the regional approach and the but they changed that to a may. So when we're comfortable with that, and the board today does essentially make those, but we brought that change to the legislature essentially out of respect for you. This bill, Building South Dakota, largely came from the legislature, so we wanted you to know. So we're very comfortable with the may, but the board actually does has exercised their discretion and does put a higher priority to the regional programs. So with that, we also, the last change in it allows us to take some administrative cost for the minister, for the grant program person that we have hired for that. Today, our complete finance department is salaries are paid out of the Revolving Economic Development Initiative Fund. The interest earned off that pays for our entire finance salaries. And so we didn't necessarily think that the grant administrator who administers solely this program and nothing else to be paid out of the Ready Fund program, we thought that we should probably take the expense out of this program just to keep them lined up appropriately. So with that, at the appropriate time, I'm happy to provide answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Costello. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 45? Seeing none, are there any opponents of Senate Bill 45? No opponents? We'll waive rebuttal, go to questions by the committee. Representative Munsterman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Costello. Could you just maybe give us a snapshot of the amount of funds that are in each area to date?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I don't have the exact balance, but I can tell you from the end of the fiscal year, as I mentioned, our infrastructure program had about $2 million in it. Now, since then, we've made a couple of large grants out of that, and the partnership program was negative $268,000, and I think the jobs had about $500,000 in it. We value all three of those programs. We think there's a use for all three of those, but there's going to be an ebb and a flow on those, which ones are going to be in higher priority. For example, under the partnership program, when we first started, we saw a lot of applications that were taking those part-time economic development people to full-time or hiring a full-time person. That evolved into workforce community coordinators, and so we started funding those as well. And then as the program has become more widely accepted and known to our economic development partners, the revolving, recapitalizing revolving loan funds have been more prevalent. And so we've put a lot of money out into the regional and the local revolving loan funds. We think the infrastructure, we've got what we know is coming down the pipeline. We think the infrastructure will probably be a bigger piece of it in the future. The communities that have the ability to match the one-to-one on the revolving loan funds and on the economic development professional are really limited when you think about it. And so we think that we're going to see a decline in those applications. We think there'll be more in the partnership program. And then on the job side of it, that's really the offset for small business development. When we look at the reinvestment payment, that's the $20 million in larger projects. And not to leave small business out, that's where the jobs portion of it, we've used it a couple of times. It's something that we use as an incentive. We put it on the table when we think it's necessary to get the deal done, but we don't if we don't have to. And so there hasn't been as much activity. We certainly value it. We want to make sure that we have that available to us in the future. And as I said at the beginning, it really is quite remarkable how Building South Dakota and all the components have really changed the ability for us to negotiate deals. It has very quickly become one of the most important economic development tools that we have alongside future funds and the READY program. So, and then just to speak on the funding mechanism, this year is the last year of the $10 million annual infusions that will go into it. We've had $30 million, I think it was appropriate in 14 for the 15, 16, and 17 budgets. So this is the last of that $10 million in the 17 budget will be. There is a mechanism for money to go into the program that requires a certain level of reserves and excess revenue at the end of the year. So there is a funding mechanism for it, but it is the last of the $10 million.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions by the committee? Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Costello, question for Mr. Costello. So talking about the partnership piece, and you indicated that your department uses that to fund economic development positions where they hadn't existed. And then in your remarks earlier, you talked about consultants. And so if a community has a consultant, an existing economic development coordinator or position, does the partnership fund allow the hiring of a consultant?
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently as it stands today, no. It's the two single source recapitalizing revolving loan funds and then matching money to hire economic development professionals to fulfill the role. This bill allows the hiring of a third-party consultant to essentially, you know, help bring the community. One idea, the way it was proposed to us and a couple of legislators approached the governor and myself about doing this. And so, and I would say about half of these changes are really legislator-driven. This is one of them. To allow, provide some money on a matching basis for communities to hire a third-party consultant of which to work on issues that their communities are dealing with, whether they be housing or leadership or just to help focus their efforts to do that. And so it provides that opportunity.
Representative Mickelson.
Mr. Secretary, nice to see you this morning. Thank you. The partnership fund had a match component that went down over time, as I recall that. And then you're widening up the scope to these revolving loan funds. Are you going to compel local participation? Would you just talk about those two things generally, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, on the match for all the programs are one-to-one. On the partnering with for economic development professionals on that, it's over 4 years that we pay out. We front-load ours a little bit more towards the beginning and less towards the end. But over the course of the 4 years, it's a one-to-one match. And the same is true on the capitalizing revolving loan funds. It requires a one-to-one match. What we're seeing in the regional approach is that they're able to go out and get a four-to-one leverage. So they're getting more money into their loan programs. We think that's a positive thing. We can leverage more of our state dollars. That's why we had proposed the higher priority for regional loan funds and that. So, but we're comfortable with the May. And I should say, I may have forgotten to mention the other amendment in that came through on, from the Senate side was to, on removing that money around, then not only at the request of myself, the commissioner, but also with the consent or approval of, it had joint appropriations. The amendment is to switch that to GOAC. We go in front of GOAC every year as part as required under statute to present on the previous year's activities. And so instead of, you know, going before different committees, we thought it made more sense just to go to the COAC. To GOAC, I spoke with the sponsor of that amendment. He's completely fine with using GOAC instead of joint appropriations.
One other question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
The administrative fees to cover your staffing of this, would you just confirm your testimony as I heard it? You're not hiring additional staff. This isn't, you're not removing general funds money. This is out of one other fund. You're not growing your staff in that. You're just going to pay for the program out of this.
Yep. Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. We did hire a new person back when the program started, and we've been paying for that person out of the ready interest, as with the entire finance department. We just felt that it was more appropriate to have this program pay for that one individual's salaries and benefits and not necessarily burden the other program with that cost.
Any other questions by the committee? See none. Thank you, sir. Open up to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mickelson.
I'll move Amendment 45OC.
It's moved by Mickelson, seconded by Langer. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is approved. Further action on Senate Bill 45 as amended. Representative Langer.
I would move due pass.
Second.
Motion is due pass as amended on 45. Any comments on the motion? Representative Munsterman?
Well, I just want to applaud the GOED for what they're doing and how you've, you know, managing the program and making the changes and improvements along the way. The regional approach by far is the way to go. I mean, we instituted that in Brookings a number of years ago, went up and down I-29 corridor, actually had a study commission. We got smaller communities, larger communities all together to get that funded. That analysis gave us a lot of great information on how those communities could really leverage their assets together through that industry cluster analysis and all that. And that really is that third party piece that you're bringing forward, which I think is great. And it'll allow for those relationships to really augment and come together, you know, between larger and smaller communities. And so I think that's a great approach. This is definitely a goal. Thank you.
Representative Holly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fully supportive of this bill. As a non-voting member of the board, it is, and the discussions about the different fund levels, and I think one of the issues that have come up is the communities don't understand the program still and trying to get it out and what's available and which program to be using. So I fully support at the time the ability to move the dollars between funds. And as brought up by Commissioner Costello, my concern is next year when the funding does quit on this, a lot of the people that were involved in setting the building 235, building South Dakota up from a legislative standpoint are going to be gone. And the real drivers are there, and I hope we don't lose that momentum, that we do keep looking for a true, valid, ongoing funding source for this. As mentioned, there has been value for our communities in this program, and we just need to keep track of it. So next year, I really hope that we come up with a true, ongoing funding for this.
Thank you, sir. Further comments on the motion to pass as amended? Seeing none, those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Bartling.
Aye.
Bolin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Hawley.
Aye.
Langer.
Aye.
Mickelson. Munsterman.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Gosh.
Aye.
Mickelson's aye.
Mickelson, thank you. 13 yea, 0 nay.
Senate Bill 45 is amended. We'll go to the floor with a due pass. Motion for consent takes a two-thirds vote, so we will not place it. Thank you for trying, though. Appreciate it. Takes us to our final item on the agenda, Senate Bill 73.
an act to clarify certain provisions regarding open meetings. We'll take proponent testimony. Good morning, Representative Norstrup. Welcome to State Affairs. You may begin your proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, committee. L. Norstrup, District 3, representing the Aberdeen-Bath area. Last year, I was here with a bill that was more comprehensive. It was open government and open records. This year, we narrowed it down, got rid of the controversial segments of that particular bill, and we think we've got a bill that can reach consensus today. This bill started when the governor in 2012 put together a task force with the Attorney General Jackley, and that task force, the two members of that particular task force was Representative Boland and myself, and the mission was to attempt to make South Dakota government open. One of the things that we believed in a long time since the founding of this nation is the fact that the government belongs to the people, and it's the people's business. And so to live up to that original promise, the meetings should be open, and we've agreed upon that for a very long time. Attorney General Tellinghuysen was one of the first to come with the concept that we've been practicing for a very long time, that we're going to attempt to put into law today. And basically, if we go to Senate Bill 73, it's on the first page, there's a sentence, and basically what it says is the definition of an official meeting. And it's common sense. It's if you've got a quorum and they're talking about official business, whether that's in person or through telecommunications, and that's what the bill does, including the internet in that concept. If we've got a quorum and they're talking about the football game, that's not an official meeting. It's only when they talk about an official meeting that becomes a meeting that is then subject to the open meeting law. So with that, I've got a great support staff today, and I'll let them give the testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Thank you, Mr. Norstrup. Further proponents on Senate Bill 73.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. David Bordewijk, registered lobbyist for South Dakota Newspaper Association. We appreciate Representative Norstrup for sponsoring this bill and for giving an excellent explanation of it. And he's certainly been a good supporter of open government over the years here, and appreciate his good work on this. As he said, he's explained the bill pretty straightforward and where it's come from, the genesis for this. This certainly is a stripped-down, cleaned-down version of legislation we worked on last year that passed the House, and it got over to the Senate, and it stalled there. Caused us to go back to the drawing board and come up with what you have before you today in Senate Bill 73, which we think is a good work product and a good reflection of what we heard from this legislature last year. As Representative Norstrup said, it does two things. We're defining what is a public meeting in South Dakota, and when I've talked to a lot of people about that, they said, well, isn't it in the law already? No, I think a lot of people assume it is, but it hasn't been. And it's based on a 1985 Attorney General's opinion by then Attorney General Roger Tellinghuysen, who said, look, if you've got a quorum of a board together and they're discussing or deciding public policy or official business, that should constitute a meeting, whether they're doing it in person or by teleconference. And then over the years, we've included the definition of teleconference in the open meetings law. In the 1980s, we included it to provide for a phone conference, an audio teleconference. And then in the early 90s, when the DDN network came along in the state of South Dakota, we expanded it to include for use of video teleconferences. So it was just a reflection of technology as we moved along. And now today, with what you find at the end of the bill, we're expanding that definition of teleconference to include the internet, which I think is a good thing. We're strengthening that definition of teleconference, which will serve us well, serve our open meetings well into the future, because who knows what technology will hold going forward. And a thing I do want to point out is on page 2 of the bill, lines 3 through 15 really spell out that if you're going to have a meeting by teleconference, there are certain things you got to do. Number one, you're going to have to attendance by roll call. In other words, public, if they're listening over the phone, they need to know who's there among board members, who's attending, because they can't perhaps visually see them, but they need to hear that you're in attendance. And secondly, the entity that's holding the meeting via teleconference must provide for a place for the public to view and participate in the meeting. In other words, at your principal place of office, you'd be able to attend and listen to the meeting and offer comments. And you see that with the Rules Review Committee, which will meet via teleconference often during the course of the year. They will provide places around the state for the public to come, listen to the meeting, and as well as testify. And I think that's worked very well. And I think this bill just expands that and gives us a better strength, better definition of a teleconference in South Dakota. When I say it's a clean or simple bill, this bill does not get into trying to define email or text messaging or other types of electronic communications as a public record. That's what the bill last year attempted to do, and that's where we got in the weeds and we ran off the road. So we've taken that out of there. Under our open records law in South Dakota in Chapter 127, official correspondence of public officials is an exception to what is a public record. In other words, your official correspondence as a public official is not considered a public record. And it's been assumed that email is comes under that definition of correspondence in South Dakota. So we're not going there with this bill. That doesn't address that, and I think that's perfectly fine and legitimate. But it does get at this notion of giving guidelines and some guardrails to public boards that say, look, if you're going to have a discussion, and if you have a quorum of you having a discussion, regardless of whether you're doing it in person or by some electronic means, over the phone, over email, over some other technology-based medium, be careful. Because now we know what is a public meeting, that quorum of a board discussing public business. And if you're going to do that, you better be following the open meetings law. In practical terms, can you hold a public meeting via email today? Probably not. Probably not. It probably would say, look, this is just isn't going to be practical for us to do in South Dakota. But who knows what the future may hold in that regard. And so with that, I will stand by. I know there's a few others that want to testify and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bordewick. Further proponents, Senate Bill 73. Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Justin Smith, attorney from Sioux Falls and another registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Newspaper Association. Here this morning to talk to you about Senate Bill 73. As you've heard from the prior two speakers, this is a concept that originally came out of the Open Government Task Force several years ago of 2011, convened by Governor Dugard and Attorney General Jackley. This bill has been greatly simplified from the version that died last year over on the Senate side. HB 1153 was the bill last year. It attempted to change statutes on open records law in addition to the open meetings law. Concerns were voiced about sweeping searches of cell phones and personal email accounts because of failure to maintain the records, failure to maintain copies of the emails, the text messages, etc. Those components have been completely removed regarding the open records laws, and now you have Senate Bill 73, which only seeks to amend Chapter 1-25, which is the open meetings chapter. What does SB 73 actually change? Its Section 1 incorporates a definition from an Attorney General opinion on what constitutes an open meeting, a quorum or more of a public body discussing official business in person or by teleconference. It's straight out of the Attorney General opinion, and most associations have been advising their boards for years that that is the proper definition of an open meeting. The Section 2 adds electronic discussions to the definition of teleconference. Public boards are holding group discussions of official business via email and group text message today. This bill will make it clear that such discussions are subject to the open meetings law. This is intended, as Mr. Bordewick said, to set up guardrails and make it clear that unless you are going to comply with Chapter 125, do not hold these discussions via electronic means. Similar to teleconferences, which are already governed by Chapter 125, you must give notice, opportunity for the public to listen in and participate. One question that we commonly get at the Newspaper Association from boards across the state is, are email discussions meetings for purposes of the open meetings law? And we answer that question by saying the courts in some states have held that contemporaneous email communications among a quorum of the governing members of a public body constitute a meeting of the public body when the members discuss the merits of pending issues. Email participation and scheduling or similar activities would not, under this analysis, constitute a public meeting. That's when you get what Representative Nordstrom talked about. Who's going to bring the donuts to the next meeting? What time and date should we hold the next meeting? None of those things are official business. We have statewide associations that have many member boards, school boards, municipal boards, etc. We've discussed this bill with them. They have been advising their member boards for years not to hold quorum discussions of official business by email or group text message, because they have already understood the law that if you are going to hold a meeting and discuss official business with a quorum or more of the board, regardless of the format for those conversations, that those are subject to the open meetings law. Public boards are special. They're very different and unique from for-profit corporation boards or even nonprofit corporation boards. The legislature and the citizenry have decided that we have a strong public policy that discussions and decisions involving the people's business and spending of our tax dollars should be open to the public. If a quorum of a public board meets at a coffee shop and discusses the acquisition of a road grader without giving any kind of notice or opportunity to the public to participate, that would be a violation of the open meetings law. SB 73 just updates our law to recognize that a quorum of a board can hold these discussions today without ever leaving their homes. In fact, a quorum or more of a public board could hold discussions of official business if all of them were in opposite parts of the world. This is our effort, Senate Bill 73, to have our open meetings law keep pace with advancing technology, just like we did with teleconferences 20, 25 years ago. As Mr. Bordewick indicated, it will be difficult to hold an open meeting by email or group text if Senate Bill 73 passes. But most of the associations out there of public board members have agreed that that's the case already. They must post notice, give a chance to participate, monitor, etc. But Senate Bill 73 strikes a balance between simply saying you may have no more electronic discussions of official business, and on the other side, having no accountability of any kind to the public when those group discussions take place. So we would ask for your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 73. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to stand by. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Charlie McGuigan with the Attorney General's Office. I will be brief. The Attorney General does support Senate Bill 73. As you heard, the original concept came out of the Joint Task Force Attorney General Jackley did along with Governor Dugard. In addition, this is advice that we've been providing to local boards and commissions for 30 years now. All this bill does is codify what we've been telling these boards and commissions for a long time, and we do support Senate Bill 73, and I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGuigan. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents on Senate Bill 73? No opponents. We'll waive rebuttal and go to questions by the committee. Are there any questions? I've got a question for, I suppose, any of the proponents. Maybe Mr. McGuigan. Has official business been interpreted by the courts, or is it defined in statute? I appreciate Mr. Smith going through some examples of what's not official business. For example, talking about who's going to bring the donuts to the next meeting. Can you help me in with that term, official business?
Mr. Chairman, I, off the top of my head, am not aware of any court decisions that have defined official business. Certainly through our Attorney General process, we have provided some definitions. In addition, I believe the issue has come up before the Open Meeting Commission. As you recall, Attorney General Long requested the creation of an open meeting commission because there aren't a lot of court decisions in South Dakota defining these terms and procedures. In addition, there's a reluctance by state's attorneys to prosecute open meeting violations because generally these are citizen boards who are doing a public service for little to no compensation. And so there's a reluctance out there by state's attorneys to prosecute these type of offenses. So the Open Meeting Commission was created as an alternative to possible open meeting violations. And I know the issue has come up before the commission as to what official business is. I also know the issue of what constitutes a quorum has come up before the commission. I can't tell you the name of any of those cases off the top of my head, but I do know both of those have been addressed by the Open Meeting Commission as well.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Other questions by the committee?
Last question.
Representative Mickelson.
Mr. McGuigan, question for you, sir. How are you today? The requirement that the meeting be made open, I'm supportive of the bill, but the requirement that a meeting be made open to the public, and since you can't make a text or an email exchange open to the public, you can't have those kinds of meetings. Is that consistent with the testimony? Is that fair interpretation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mickelson, we have been providing the advice to boards and commissions for a number of years as technology has come along that you can't use email and other technological advances to defeat the purposes of the open meeting statutes.
Any follow-up? Any other questions by the committee? Well, thank you. We will now open up to committee discussion and or action.
Sure.
Representative Mickelson.
I'll move to pass.
Second.
Motion is due pass by Mickelson, seconded by Langer. Comments on your motion?
No, sir.
Any further comments by the committee? I will comment that one of the concerns I've always had with bills like this is that it potentially sets up inefficiencies of government, because you're not allowing the members of the public body to freely discuss items and move along when things happen and ideas pop into their head and they want to share it with somebody else. And I know our public utility commissioners, for example, fought this battle of what they can talk about, what they can't talk about within their own office on second floor. And when they come back, or first floor, when they come back from a conference, they felt like they couldn't even share the information they learned with the other two commissioners. And so I kind of picture this scenario where we have three public utility commissioners sharing an office space, and they pretend like they don't exist in that same office. They don't even talk to each other other than maybe say hi. And that free exchange of ideas just isn't going on. And in a situation like this, and we don't know what official business is, and so if we had a quorum of school board members attending a Cracker Barrel, where education is a topic, have they violated the open meetings laws because they didn't post notice that there was going to be a quorum there where that education topic was going to be discussed? And so then do they err on the side of caution and make sure some people just stay home? Or if it's televised and two are watching at home and five are present, did they violate the open meetings laws? And I think that concern of mine is valid, and I think it just creates inefficiencies of government. I get what you're trying to get at with if a meeting is actually going to occur over the internet or via text, then it seems to me that should be posted. You should have notice, and people should have the opportunity to attend and find out what's going on. But if you're sitting at the basketball game with enough members of your local government entity that constitutes a quorum, and you heard someone in the back say they've got a road grader for sale, and you want to share that with your members of local government, right? Hey, did you hear that? We have an opportunity to buy a road grader. Shh, don't talk about that right now because we've got a quorum. We need to file public notice first and then have a meeting, and then we invite that gentleman, and then we'll talk about that road grader option. I think that's the kind of inefficiency of government that doesn't help, and it ends up creating more costs and requires more taxpayer dollars. So it's a concern I have with issues like this. The motion is due pass. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Bartling.
Aye.
Bolin.
Aye.
Hager.
Aye.
Holly.
Aye.
Langer.
Aye.
Mickelson.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Please
excuse. Solem.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Gosh.
No.
We have 11 yay, one excused, and one no.
It's 11 to 1. The one vote would amount to opposition. You cannot have consent. Senate Bill 73 will go to the floor with a due pass. That concludes our agenda. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
It's moved by Westra, seconded by Hager.